is up, everybody? Welcome back to Wisdom of the Weight Room, the podcast that takes wisdom gained in the weight room and brings it into your everyday life. Today, we're going to be discussing training burnout, how you burn out with your exercises, with your workouts, with your training programs. If you're an athlete training for a sport, we're going to talk all those facets of how you burn out, why you burn out, and ways you can fix that burnout. So we hope you enjoy this episode. Before we go any further, what I need you to do is make sure you are following on all of our social platforms, on Instagram, on YouTube, and on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. That's where you can both listen to the podcast and watch the podcast. Wisdom of the Weight Room is where you can find us on all those platforms. That's it for here. Let's get right into the episode. Miguel, how's it going? Welcome back. I gotta ask, how you feeling?
I'm all right, man. The weekends help me. Yeah, I get to recover. I get to sleep.
So let's start off by prefacing this. So we talked about burnout last week, just like in a generic form. And you were kind of hinting on that you don't really get burned out necessarily.
Yeah.
But it was funny, like then fast forward a couple days later, like middle of the week, I see you in the gym, you're like, damn, man, I'm feeling burned out. So it was just funny. So what's, like, yeah, what would you relate that to, or what's that all about?
It's just the schedule. I mean, the schedule, by midweek, I'm tired. You know, I'm not getting a lot of sleep, I guess, at night, which can lead to burnout. I probably average 6 hours of sleep, which is not ideal. 8 is perfect for me.
Keep going.
8, I can function. I can train better. You know, everything else revolves around sleep for me. But it's life, man. Life doesn't allow you, sometimes me, to get that sleep, and that's what it is. But it's just the schedules from like 6 a.m. to 9 o'clock is just go, 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 which is nice because then I don't get a chance to feel tired during the day because I'm on the go. But by the time I come to my last group, I'm tired. I'm exhausted. And then by Friday, I'm just like done. Like I'm wore out. And I could sleep. And so then, you know, like Friday night, I go to bed pretty early. And then by Saturday, I feel great because I've gotten eight and a half hours of sleep. Sunday, same thing. And that allows me to be ready to go for the next week. So if I didn't have the weekends to recover and get sleep, then I would definitely be burnt. I mean, there's been weekends where I haven't. And it's just like Monday comes around and I feel like I did on Friday. I don't feel like I can take on the week like I normally would if I get that sleep. And so, yeah, I was definitely feeling it last week. It's weird, though, because, like, some weeks are different. I think last week what it was we found out some bad news. Well, not bad news. Some news about our son, Magnus, and that we had an appointment in Des Moines on Tuesday. And in my head, I had thought that everything was going to be better than the results we had gotten. The results kind of had, they're open-ended, where we don't really know what's going on. And so that mentally, that wore on me after I found out that news on Tuesday, which wore on me Wednesday. And then by Thursday and Friday, you know, I was better mentally, but it had taken a lot out of me after finding the news out Tuesday and Wednesday. And then Wednesday, it was just, yeah, that was rough. And so that by the end of the week, you know, I was just ready to be done just because it had been a long week already. And that was, you know, it's weird how that works. Like that was in the beginning of the week and that it can affect the rest of your week.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, and so I think that's really what happened. If I compare it to other weeks, like I can normally handle stress pretty well, I would say. But that was a different type of stress that I really haven't had to deal
with before.
Yeah. And
it's a new stress for sure.
A new stress. And so that definitely played a factor. And, you know, this week will be interesting. Hopefully I can bounce back from this week because we have an appointment on Tuesday morning for him. And so we'll see how that goes. But it might be the same thing where I'll be in the same boat by the end of the Friday because I'm mentally just wore out and I try not to be stressed about it. But
do you find like when you're like mentally pushing that boundary of like fatigue, like do you feel your mental fatigue ever spills into physical fatigue?
Yeah, I think it does sometimes, but I've really tried to focus on not allowing it to, like physically. When you ask that question, do you mean just in general, or are you talking about
like have you ever felt, yeah, like your, how, whatever you take on mentally, so like stress, income, mm-hmm. Like parenthood, whatever mm-hmm. it is, it segues itself into like your physical capabilities.
I think so. I think mentally, if I'm not right, a lot of times it can affect my training, but I really try to, I've focused on not allowing it affecting my training. I know sometimes it can be impossible, it seems like, but I try not to think about those things. You know, Tuesday was a day where I didn't train Tuesday because I didn't have time with my schedule and when Magnus had his appointment. But I came in Tuesday after finding the news and I squatted anyways. You know, I came in and I had 30 minutes before my 5 o'clock session. And so in my head, you know, I'm always preaching, you know, things remind me to keep going, you know, do what most won't. Well, I don't have the greatest news, and where my mindset was not, oh, I'm going to get after training today, like I have 30 minutes, but it was thinking to myself, hey, you have 30 minutes. What would most people do with their 30 minutes? Would they train or would they not train? And in my mind, most people would not train. They would just say, no, I just can't do it. I'm not mentally able to today because of the news I found out. And you know what? I said, whatever. Like, I can't change the fact that we found this news, so I'm just going to train anyways. So I did some dumb things. I just did plate jumps up to the weight, and then, you know, I went on with my schedule with the clients that I had after that. But it's the reminders that I have to remind myself, like, in the position that we are in as coaches, we're constantly coaching up people on how to push through and how to get these reps and how to get these weights and how to attack life. It reminds me to do the same thing every single day, even when my days are going well or when they're long or when the week's been a better week than other weeks. I remind myself that I got to do the same thing, and that makes it easier for me mentally and then physically to get through it.
Yeah, you're definitely right on that. My take on it would be, so I asked you that because I actually have an answer myself. I do believe wholeheartedly that, yeah, your mental stressors mm-hmm. can equate to physical stress, even if you're not doing anything. Like how many times have you, dealt with something mentally, like a situation, kind of like what you're talking about? Like, you get some bad news or not good news, and it kind of just throws you for a spin, and you start to and then you just, like, yeah, like, your ambition is gone, your drive's gone. All because of a thing you, in your head, are processing. Mm-hmm. It's not like you physically went and ran a marathon, but mm-hmm. the mental stress is making, like, your body feel like that.
Fatigue.
So it's definitely like a yin and yang situation where, yeah, like, your mentality can dictate your physicality. Mm-hmm. But you touch on it pretty well as trying not to let that dictate it, like, 100%. Because mm-hmm. you are right, and, like, you can always get something done. You can always push through that physical or mental fatigue in order to get some physicality out of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it definitely comes from a mindset, from a learning perspective, like understanding that, like, mm-hmm. I can't let this dictate the rest of my day, yeah. the rest of my, like, outcome, my training, whatever, even though it might. And I always say it, and I tell people this a lot, is like, you just got to give what you got. Yeah. It's like, if you're only working at 50% capacity today, that's fine. Just try to make sure you're giving 100% of that 50% that you have. So yeah, that's really good. Let's get into, so we talked about, we're kind of ending the like generalized life burnout, right? Mm-hmm. So now you wanted to touch
let me add something. So something that happened this week that was kind of cool. So I have a client that I picked up probably a month ago, and he's very motivated. He's very successful, everything he does. And it was just, things kind of happen in a weird way sometimes in life that, you know, we talked about this podcast last week and about our subject, or, you know, what we're talking about right now, burnout. And so I was asking him this week when I met with him, how do you not get burned out? Like, how does that work? Your schedule is a lot more crazy than mine. You're always on the go. And he said, this is, I don't know why this hit home for me, but it made a lot of sense. He said, I used to work in a factory in a place that I did not enjoy. I did not have a lot of good memories. It was a bad place for me. And when I got out of there, I got into this business that he does now. And he said, you know, there's three times out of the year that I go back to that parking lot on my worst days and reflect and remind myself that everything's going to be okay. And that makes a lot of sense, because on days that I get extremely burnt out or weeks, I have to remind myself where I started. You know, why I'm doing this, or like my other jobs that I've had that, you know, maybe I wasn't as happy in. I remind myself, okay, this is where I came from, and ground myself in that, and that pushes me to keep going. And it makes sense. Like, I'm like, well, I was already doing that, and then he talks about it. Now it's justifying what I'm doing when I need to do that too. That's what people have to do.
It's just solidifying.
It's solidified doing the right thing. That I'm doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. And so I think that other people need to do the same thing. If they get to that point where they are getting close to being burnt out in their job, remind yourself, you know, where you started, where you came from, how much you've grown, and then reflect on that so that it can help push you through the burnout. You know, hopefully you're at a job that there is some good to it. But, you know, just like this the client of mine has said, you know, he has to do it too. We all need to do it at some points. And we've all been in positions where we've been at a place that was not good for us. But then, you know, just continue to push through it by knowing that you've been in worst places.
Yeah, that's really cool. He says about, it's kind of what we talked about last week. It's reflecting your perspective. Mm-hmm. Like I'm trying to do with my journaling and stuff that I talked about last week. So that's really cool.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably a big proponent of a lot of people dealing with burnout is, is just understanding perspective and what could be. So looking at like what could be worst or what could be better.
Mm-hmm.
If you have the capabilities of changing it, change it. If not, accept it.
Yeah.
And then looking at like the positives more so than the negatives.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause like you said, if you have a passion for something, there's always going to be a negative connotation about it.
Yeah.
There's always going to be something not ideal, not like perfect.
Mm-hmm.
It goes hand in hand with like if you only do things when you feel good, I don't think you'll ever do anything in life.
Mm-hmm.
Like if everything has to be ideal, if everything has to be in like the perfect place, I don't think anything will happen. I think that falls in line both with life and then of course with like fitness, training, exercise, athletics, all that.
Mm-hmm.
I
think you need reminders a little bit, you know. You need to be reminded why you're doing it, you know, why you're doing work, you know, like, or why you don't need to be stressing. So one other example that happened this week is after we found out with Magnus, I went to my mom and I said, you know, Mom, is this something I should be worrying about? And she said no. And as soon as she said no, it was like, ooh.
Like a weight was lifted?
Yeah. Yeah. She said, you know, she gave me a lot of support and feedback that I needed to hear. And, you know, her being a doctor, I trust what she says. And so it really helped me get through the rest of the week. And she probably doesn't even know that, like, and she doesn't listen to these podcasts either, so but she's an important person in my life that I listen to, even though I didn't for a long time, but I listen to her and I respect what she has to say. And so, you know, other people out there too, you have to have that support, you know, that support that we talked about last week, where you're in a positive environment but you have people pushing you and people you can talk to help you push through the burnout if that's where you're getting to. And then just in general, like to have conversation with, to make sure that you are okay and that things will be okay. I think that's very important. So that's all I had.
Yeah, it's wild how just a simple change in perspective from an outside view, mm-hmm, can change your mentality on something and change ultimately change your perspective, or at least how you approach it.
Yeah, definitely.
It's always good to have a, an uplifting or like, just a presence there that can like calm you and remind you and kind of like contain your emotions, because obviously if we let our emotions get the best of us, we're not going to be in a good place. So it's that, both doing that for yourself, but then having the structure around you with people and the places you're in to validate what's going on.
Yep.
Cool. All right. So kind of getting into more of the training aspect of it. And obviously a lot of these things are going to go hand in hand. I want to ask you maybe your perspective or your experience with athletic / training burnout. So we'll kind of keep them in the same realm, because in my opinion, when you're training, whether you're playing for a sport, playing the sport itself, practicing it, or working to better perform it with like training, fitness, weight room, things like that, I think those all kind of go hand in hand. So what's your perspective, Miguel, and your kind of experience with athletic training burnout?
I think,
and you could touch on maybe from your own experience, like with your training, and then obviously from a coaching perspective.
Okay.
So I don't know if you want to combine.
Let me talk about my own training, and I can talk about coaching. So personally, I haven't gotten to the point where I've been training for whatever many years, a long time, 13, 14 years maybe, and I haven't felt burned out. And it's probably the way I'm training. And it's, I would say a lot of it has to do with my recovery, you know? And so, you know, I know I'm neglecting sleep, but I'm eating enough that's going to help me prevent injury. I'm hydrating, like eat, sleep, hydrate is what I tell my athletes all the time. And I'm doing that for the most part, besides the sleeping. And then my training that I do, what I do when I'm in the weight room is preventing me from getting burned out. So, you know, changing the stimulus, if it's changing the lift or the bar we use, if it's working on weaknesses, if it's the duration of time that I'm training, if it's, you know, who I'm training with. There's a lot of different elements that go into me not getting burned out. It could be even the facility you're in. You know, so one time I might be at one facility at one gym and I'm getting to the point where I'm like, oh, I'm not looking forward to going there. So I, you know, that happened to me like 7-8 years ago. So I switched gyms. It was a good place and I liked it. And then that gym expanded and got a new gym. So then it was another change. And then after that, then I got my own gym. And so now that I have my own gym, there has been days where I'm
so
like,
so how are you going to run from that?
Yeah, exactly.
Can't change a gym that you're
at. Yeah, that you're at. So like what I think about sometimes is I'm like, you know, I'm getting to that, maybe I'm getting burned out with this gym. Maybe I just take a day off and go to the old gym and just be there again for one day and just remind myself like, okay, it's not really, maybe it's not really that bad at mine.
That is a good point, because I've done that too, where like even the gyms I worked at, I'm like, this place is just eating me alive. So like I either go back, like I went to the Iowa Central for a week or two. Like I'll pop into another gym. So it's nice. Yeah. To like get a different, like change of scenery like almost like a vacation in some sense. Like you don't necessarily walk completely away from the gym you're at, but like whether it's going completely cold turkey with it, like I'm just going to take a week off. I'm just not going to come to the gym or like that. Like I still want to train. I still like, but I just need a different scenery for a while. So that's cool.
Yeah. I think also, you know, it's like, I try to minimize the stress that I have in the gym. So if you're stressed in the gym, that's not helping you train, right? And so, and what I mean is like when I train, I don't want to worry about other people training. And I tell the guys that all the time. If you watch me, I'm not cueing a lot. Like I'm not going to say, hey, do this. Unless something's really wrong with your technique and your form. For the most part, I'm in my own world. I don't want to think about cues. I don't want to think about training you. This is my time to train myself. If you want to train with me, perfect, but I gotta have
there's a big difference between training partners and then like training a client.
Yes, absolutely, yes. And sometimes it's like crosses the line where it's just like it's too much technical training, and it's just like, let's just enjoy this training. Like, let's not, okay, if your form's terrible, obviously we're going to fix it. But if it's little things, I'm not going to worry about it. Like, that's not the point of me training. And it's probably different for me because I'm doing it. I'm training people all the time, 24/7. So it's for these, some of these guys, it's probably nice for them to actually like, oh, hey, this gives me opportunity to coach a little bit, to cue techniques and whatnot, which is awesome. I mean, I'm not knocking and disregarding or and bringing them down for that. But for me, I'm doing it all the time. So I need to have space where I'm not doing it. I want to enjoy my training. And there's been days where it's like, I'm not enjoying this because we're just not, we're not able to train. Let's have fun with this, you know? And,
So I might be selfish in that regard because not that I don't like training with people, but yeah, like it's hard to train with others if like you're not on the same frequency of things,
yeah,
or if you just don't train adequately enough, yeah, like you're just not on the same routine, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I found it hard to find someone who like jives with me. That's mm-hmm. usually why I lift somewhat alone or like do my own thing. It's for those reasons because, yeah, I don't want to stress over like, man, like we're resting too much or we're not resting enough or like someone's squatting with me. And like the coaching aspect never really leaves you, right? You're all, like, I am looking around, even if I'm not, like, I don't have my coach's hat on.
Yeah.
I still kind of do. Like, mm-hmm. if I'm in any gym, doesn't matter. Like, I'm always like critiquing inside of my own head of like, oh, that's a bad squat or like, mm-hmm. wow, that's pretty terrible. I never say anything, obviously, like even if I'm there just to be there, like if I'm not your coach, I will not say anything because I think that's just out of respect. We've all been in gyms where you have those
not like, so,
quote unquote yeah. gym coaches where yeah, they're always coming around and like
annoying
as
hell.
It's like, bro, I didn't ask you.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to be that
guy. I'm not going to be that person either. If you ask me, it's going to,
yeah, if you ask me stuff, but I'm not going to walk up like, oh, you know what? Like, unless they're like,
they're good.
At a complete detriment,
yeah,
and I feel comfortable enough with the
yeah,
person.
You have a relationship, maybe.
Yeah, like if like, oh, I bet. Hey, man, yeah. I'm looking out for you. You shouldn't be doing that deadlift
yeah.
right now.
Yeah,
it's bad. But I mean, sometimes you just gotta let people do what they do. But to what I'm saying, like when I'm training, yeah, like it's hard to do both things. It's hard to coach and coach like train yourself.
Yeah,
because what am I focusing on when I'm not lifting? So if I'm in a squatting routine, I meant 5x5 or whatever, I'm either squatting and I'm focused on me squatting. And then when I'm resting, I'm focusing on the next set or I'm calculating the previous set to then dictate the next set. So when you put in another person and they're lifting with you, and again, that coach's hat never comes off,
mm-hmm.
they're squatting while you're resting. It's like, okay, yeah. what am I focused on? Yeah. Am I focused on them squatting? Am yeah. I trying to help them? Or yeah. am I trying to help myself for the next set?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
with me, it's hard to juggle those things. And that's why I lift somewhat alone because mm-hmm. I want to have input. I want to give them feedback, especially if they're working out with me. Like
yeah.
if they respect me enough and they see themselves wanting to work out with me, like I'll take that to a high standard, you know? So it's either two ways. I either neglect my training and I help them out, which a lot of times that's kind of what happens, or I neglect them and I focus on my training.
Yeah.
So for me, it's hard to juggle both things if I'm training with people. So I either have to find someone who I like don't have to worry about them. Like yeah. if I'm like, okay, like this dude, like I don't need to tell him anything. I don't need to cue anything. I don't need to do anything mm-hmm. like that.
And then like the other, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, you're good.
The other things that kind of like, that can be not annoying, but that are there is like if you're training with somebody who gives cues that you wouldn't give, you know, like, and that's part of like, let's just train, you know, because somebody will give a cue and I'm like, I don't know, you know, like in my head, I'm like, that's not the cue I'd be giving.
Yeah.
And so then you're questioning that. So then you're not thinking about your own training because you're like, what the, why are you cueing like that? Or like, why are we worried about this? You know, like why not like just get into it and let's just go,
mm-hmm.
you know? And sometimes, you know, my buddy, our buddy Aaron, did a good job of putting me in my place the other day. Cause my, intern Alec and I were discussing some training with clients and whatnot. And we totally were getting out of training. And Aaron said something like, what are you here to do right now? because, you know, like, we're training. And I'm like, oh, yeah, duh.
Yeah.
And,
you know, that's like, another aspect with training partners is, yeah, you get kind of, like, lost in the sauce of, like, hanging out, kind of broing out, which is fine every now and then. But again, if you came to do what you want to do.
And, you know, I've never had that problem. You know, it's, and I think it's partially, you know, Alec is getting acquainted with how we train.
Yeah.
And I don't want to discuss work related matters, even though we're in the gym when we work, when we train, you know, like there's another place for that. I want to train. I don't want to be focused on anything but training. So you know, we've discussed prior episodes about training partners, but you know, they help you too from getting to burnout because they can bring other things you haven't thought about to the training, you know, to your own training. They have different perspectives. They might have done something you haven't done before. So then it's like, oh, that's cool. I've never thought about that. Let's train, like, let's use that exercise instead of the ones we normally go to. Excuse me. So that can make your training a little bit more exciting, which keeps you wanting to come back. When you expect the same things every day, like, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to bench, or I'm going to squat on this day, I'm going to deadlift, and you don't change up what you're doing with those movements, it's very easy for you to get burned out and just to not be motivated anymore to come. I think other things that help, you know, keep me excited with the gym is that there's always somebody new in there, it seems like. So then you're able to, people get to see you train and how you do things, and then you can, you know, after your training, you can talk to them, and then, you know, you're motivating them, and that keeps the environment more exciting. If it's the same people every single day, it can get to the point where it's like, oh, well, this isn't exciting anymore. But if you have constantly new people coming in, then you're meeting new people, and it can, you know, you never know what type of relationships you can make with those people. You might find a training partner, et cetera. So that can make it exciting. I think limiting your stress levels when you are training is huge. Another thing that I would say that used to stress me out a lot was if I missed a training day. Like, I mean, it still bothers me, but it used to like drive me insane. Like, I can't miss a training day. I cannot, like, I'm gonna lose all my, you know, my results. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people have that mindset where they don't take days off. Like, it's like, oh, if I don't make the gym, you know, I'm gonna get fat or I'm gonna,
if I don't use it, I'll lose it.
Yeah.
That perspective for sure.
And like, that's me a lot, but not as bad anymore. Like, you know, Tuesday this week, we have another point. Like last Tuesday, I had 30 minutes to train. This Tuesday, my normal training time's in the morning, and I'm going to be in Des Moines because of Magnus. So I'm okay. Like, it's all right. Getting the amount of days I've gotten in last week was good enough. And that's okay. Like, I have to remind myself, like, you're not going to lose everything in one day. You know, there's the next day to come back. And some days, those days off, unexpected days off, I guess, are nice. And the body needs them. You know, normally I'm training 6 days a week, one day of recovery. It's worked so far for me, but if it gets to the point where it's too much, then I got to make that change. And so then I know, like, me personally, my body, I know when to listen to it. So that's another big pointer for me, is being able to listen to your body. Most people don't listen to their bodies. They don't listen to their bodies when they're training. They don't listen to their bodies when they're recovering. They don't listen to their bodies when they're not at the gym. They forget to do that. That is huge. That keeps me healthy. You know, I know when something's wrong when I train. And so I know when I need to pull back, or I know when I can ramp it up. And that's only been, the only reason why I know that is because I think the duration of how long I've been training, the amount of years I've put into it. And so, and as we get older, you have to listen more. Your body really will talk to you and tell you what you need to do in your training and how to change things up so you don't reach the point of burnout. So that's something I've gotten really good at too, is just listening and changing things up when I need to. And then I think I've fallen, well, it's not a think, I know I've fallen in love with training. I love it. And I'm never going to stop loving it. I mean, people will say like, oh, what if you get to that age where you don't love it anymore? Well, hopefully everything I'm doing right now will keep me in the mindset where I'm not burned out, where I hate it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think if you take time in your training for yourself and you listen to what you're, to your body, and you recover, hopefully it's a lifelong journey of training. if you don't do that, you'll be one of those people that falls off and stops training because you've gotten to the point of burnout. You know, wait, I'd even talk about like, you know, deloading and whatnot, but there is some type of deloading that I do on days that I'm not training, you know, where I totally take off training, or in my, the way I train is more strength related. I know that I cannot move certain amounts of weight day in, day out. My central nervous system will get fried and I won't be able to recover from it. So I have a, we do dynamic effort where one day is a strength day, one day is a speed day. And then one day is kind of like a multi, kind of higher intensity with a random movement, like a strength movement, like a sled pull, some type of walk that keeps it interesting. Mm-hmm. And then Saturdays are always nice when we do the conditioning because it's always different, you know, so that, that keeps it exciting. What about you?
So, yeah, you touched a lot on good points of like overtraining. I think I equate training burnout, athlete burnout, et cetera, to probably three things. That would be overtraining, which some people could argue like there's no such thing. You're just under recovering. I think they're both play a role. So there's overtraining, there's overreaching, and then there's, yeah, under recovery. I think those are kind of the three you can kind of go on. And there could be more. There could be kind of nuances to them. But those are the three I usually look at. So if someone's coming to me like, man, I'm feeling burned out, or like my performance is lacking or things like that, that's kind of the three things I go to is, well, are you overtraining? And what does overtraining mean to me is just doing too much too often. Mm-hmm. Even if it's like too much of a good thing is still a bad thing.
Yeah.
Because you're just over consuming that thing, even if it's a good stimulus to yourself. So that could be your sessions are too long, so you're in the gym too much. And it depends on the person, of course. Like, what are you trying to do? What are you trying to accomplish? Like, everyone's different. Like, I can't tell you, like, hey, you have to be in the gym for 2 hours and you have to maximize those 2 hours. If that's what it needs to be for your given thing, absolutely. But maybe it's an hour. Maybe it's hour and a half. Maybe it's only 30 minutes. It depends on the person for sure. But most often than not, again, a thing that's equating to burning out is doing, you're in the gym too much. And like you were talking about, like, even if you're obsessed with it, it kind of, it gets hard to walk away from it or stay away from it because you want to be there so much. But if you can understand that taking time off and balancing your schedule of training can benefit it more than harm it. Because you think like, oh, if I'm not in the gym, I'm not getting better. And mm-hmm. that's totally opposite, because if you're in the gym an appropriate amount of time, you can allow that other time outside of the gym to focus on other things. What could give you a mental relief from the gym? It could help you recover, things like that. So yeah, just being in the gym too long and then too often. So like, I always tell people one day, like spend one day a week out of the gym, no matter what. Like, I don't care what you, I don't care if you're a professional athlete, just getting into it. Leave one day of just not a fucking thing, because that's going to help. Like you were even talking about with your work schedule. It's like, I have the weekend to kind of recharge. And if you're in the gym 7 days a week, how are you recharging? Mm-hmm. I know some people, like, if you can balance it, if you're in the gym for 2 hours, hopefully, if it's 7 days a week, ideally, you would want those other 22 hours to be maximized recovery. But that's a hard thing to do. Mm-hmm. So most of the time, having one day a week of just absolutely nothing is ideal. And then I usually say maybe 2 days a week. Depends on the person, of course. Like, if you're just getting into it, you got to really ramp up subtly. Like, you're not going to take just a Joe Schmo off the street, Miguel, and you're going to say, all right, we're in the gym 6 days a week, 2 hours a day, hard training. It's like, yeah. No, that's going to F you up. Uh-huh. So you have to balance it. You have to kind of, again, subtly ramp yourself up. But even at the peak, I would say like 5 days is probably good for solid training.
Yeah.
And even if those, and even in those 5 days, you should, like you were saying, you have a speed day and then a max effort day or a heavy day, yep. You know, like, so that goes into my next step. So you're in the gym too much. So you're overtraining. Okay. You're overstimulating, and then you're overreaching. So if you're in the gym a lot, if you can balance it, it's a fine thing. So if you want to do 5-6 days a week, as long as you're doing the things correctly inside of it, so you're not overreaching. And what I mean by overreaching is like maxing out too often or going heavy too often, right? Too heavy too often. Mm-hmm. And that's why I see a lot of people, especially very inexperienced or newer athletes, newer lifters, they want to lift heavy because it's one, it's cool, it's fun, and yes, it's cool, it's flashy, it's what the gram wants to see, right? Not grandma Instagram. But yeah, too heavy too often, so you're just overstimulating in that regard. Even if you're in the gym 3 days a week, you can overreach and overtrain even if you're not in the gym a lot. So if you're in the gym 3 days a week, but you're always maxing bench on Monday and then maxing squat on Tuesday and maxing deadlift on Wednesday, I'm only in the gym 3 days. I'm balancing out. It's like, well, you're still overdoing it because you're overreaching. You're not allowing yourself to, again, maybe have some dynamic efforts or some accessory stuff or working at a lower percentage to get your nervous system equated to it or your movement pattern. Maybe you're not focused on that because you're going too heavy. You're mashed potato squatting like we or deadlifting like we always say. So you're like, you're going too heavy too often. And it kind of goes back to what I was saying, doing too much in the gym from an overtraining perspective is maybe you're doing too many reps. Maybe you're doing too many sets. You're doing 10 sets of five. What the hell is that about? If you've ramped up to it, yes. Like, again, it always goes back to, is it part of the program? Is it part of your goal? Is it, does it equate to that? That's fine. But more often than not, that might not be the case. Mm-hmm. So you might be doing too many reps, might be doing too many exercises too. I see everyone, especially in this world that we live in, is everyone wants to do a lot because that's kind of like the cool thing to do, right? Yeah. They're hitting a heavy max out squat and then they're going doing this accessory stuff and then they're doing this and doing that. And it's like, you just got to simplify it because again, you're doing too much too often, which goes into my third step. So like under recovery, it's hard to recover from a lot of stress. It's somewhat maybe doable. A lot of obviously elite pro level athletes are doing it because like that's their job and stuff, but they have a lot of avenues and a lot of tools in their toolbox to work off of. The average person, no, not really. And that's a big thing. I think that's a gripe of mine is people look at the fitness industry and they see like the upper echelon doing the things that they're doing and they assume that that's what they need to be doing.
Yeah.
If it's good for the best, why wouldn't it be good for the rest?
Yeah.
And that's not the case about it because they're trying to stay the best. They're trying to be the best. Like they're the 0.001% of the population. Kind of the big thing about like CrossFit, CrossFit's a good example of like people see CrossFit and they see like these elite level performers doing elite level things and they're like, oh wow, like if I want to be fit, that's what I got to do.
Yeah.
Certainly not the case.
Mm-hmm.
And I would argue, you know, like I'm getting wise in my ways, Miguel. I would argue that the top level athletes in any sport, but CrossFit maybe specifically, I wouldn't necessarily call them the healthiest of people. And I can maybe use Matt Frazier as a good example, and he could maybe even say this because I've seen a lot of his content online, and he says like I'm not here to be healthy. I'm here to win. So I'm eating Snickers bars like crazy. I'm eating Gatorade or drinking Gatorade. I'm doing these things to perform. I'm not doing them to be healthy. I'm doing them to perform, and there's a fine line there. So. Yeah, I just had to bring that up because that's a big gripe of mine. Is like everyone's like, oh, I want to go to the CrossFit Games. Or like I see Derrick Henry's another one. He's always doing his weird-ass band stuff online. And everyone's like, oh, I got to do that. It's like, no. And that, again, that goes back to like you're overreaching is you're doing something you shouldn't be doing at this point in time. Or you shouldn't do at all because it's just not in your parameters of health.
Yeah, you haven't worked for it.
Yeah, you haven't worked for it. And you don't need, like you're not a pro level running back. Like you don't need to be doing that. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's cool. And that's the shit pisses me off so much on Instagram. It's like, cause you see these elite level athletes sharing their things and what they're doing. And it's kind of just the way the fitness industry has gone is like,
yeah.
Like I just said, if it's good for the best, it's good for the rest.
Yeah.
That's certainly not the case.
No.
So you got overtraining, overreaching, and then my third point, under recovery. And you kind of hit on it. Eat, sleep, hydrate. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the easiest one to neglect.
It is. Yeah.
It's hard to, I don't want to say it's not hard. Like, it's easy to overtrain.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to overconsume. So it's easy to max out a lot because, again, it's the fun thing to do. It's easy to go to the gym a lot when you're upset, like you're addicted to it and obsessed with it. It's not easy to do the right things outside of the gym.
Yeah.
It's hard to get the proper nutrition. It's hard to go to bed. I can kind of equate it to like some of the younger athletes we have. Like, they want to hang out with their buddies. They want to get online. They want to play their video games. Not that those are bad things, but when they are taken away from your sleep, then yes, that could be a bad thing. So it's hard to go to bed at a proper time. And it's hard to, like, it's easy to bring in more. It's easy to do more. It's hard to do less.
Yeah.
So that's both from an overtraining perspective. So like staying out of the gym a couple of days a week. Like if I was like, if I'm getting back into the coaching area, that's how I would look at it. Like I, like some of my athletes, if we equate it to when I was at the high school, it's like they're doing two-a-days like in the gym. It's like, what are you doing, man?
Yeah.
What, like, two-a-days in the weight room is nonsense. Mm-hmm. This isn't like football practice. This isn't anything like that. You could even argue about stuff like that, but like you squatted in the morning, now you're coming back to squat again. That makes no sense.
Yeah.
So from a coaching perspective, you sometimes got to tell your athletes, like, get the hell out of my gym.
Mm-hmm.
Not because I don't like you, not because I don't want to see you. It's for your own betterment.
Yeah.
Get the hell out of the gym. Why are you here as much as you are? Because if you're in here, you're doing two things. You're overtraining or you're under recovering.
Mm-hmm.
Two things are going to happen. So under recovering, of course, is lack of sleep. So lack of sleep, lack of food. And then lack of even body care. This is something I see a lot, and this was kind of my biggest point with under recovery is everyone knows that, oh yeah, I should drink more water, I should eat more good quality foods, and I should get more sleep. I said, though, that's a hard thing to do, right? People, they know it. They just either don't want to do it or they know it's like really hard to do. The one thing that really gets bypassed and overlooked is, yeah, like lack of body care. So lack of like taking care of yourself, whether it's mobility stuff or stretching or going to the doctor. And I can even be a person about that would be an example of that. It's like, I don't go to the doctor that often. Like, I usually, if I have something wrong, I'm usually I either work through it, which is, again, not the proper way to go about it, or like I take it to its peak levels.
Yep,
and like once
just push the limits.
Yeah, it's like not when it's, when it has to be completely broken in order for me to fix it.
Yeah.
And by then it's kind of hard to do.
Yeah.
So if you can work on not overtraining, so not doing too much too often, not overreaching, kind of same thing, doing too much too often, but in like a stress exertion standpoint, and then not under recovering. I think if you can hit those three things and be at least somewhat like conscious of them, it'll help you stay from that burned out point.
I like it. Those are all good. I'm trying to think if I have anything to add to that. You did a great job explaining it.
I took notes this week, bud.
That was good.
From an overtrain, so I have these three here. We can break them down even more. So overtraining, I was talking about like doing too much too often. Like, what's maybe your perspective on that? Like, if you see maybe yourself in the gym too much, or an athlete per se, let's keep it more athletic.
You know, like, I think it's harder to coach men into selling them, hey, don't come here this much.
Absolutely.
You know, like, it's an ego male thing that men, it's like the men that think they have to do more. You know, they see this guy who's doing this. You know, there's
it might be like a natural thing, or like a thing of nature. You know, we're trying to prove ourselves.
Yeah.
Or like we're trying to like show off for a relationship or something like that.
But usually it ends up like what I've seen, especially in our gym, is people get hurt. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, why? Why are we doing this? You know, and maybe I'd be that way too if I wasn't strong. You know, I'd be an ego guy who would try to do things that I know I shouldn't be doing. But I'm not that anymore, just because maybe I am strong. I don't know.
And wiser.
Yeah. And I've, I, yeah.
Because I've seen you a lot of times, like, you'll back off a squat or something like that. Like,
I know.
Push through something.
No. Yeah, because
yeah,
I
definitely
know.
Comes with age.
Yeah, it does. Experience. And it's experience. Experience and training. I used to push through things. But then what I've been telling people is when I've pushed through those things, it just pushes my training back because I get injured. And so then I have to take, you know, weeks to recover and not do the movement. I don't want to waste time like that. So that's what I remind my athletes now is, hey, I know you could push through this. I know you're capable of it, but what's the outcome going to be? Are you going to get injured from doing so? You might not feel it right away, but I guarantee tomorrow you're going to come in and say, Coach, I really messed up my back. Well, this is what I'm trying to do. I'm looking out for you. So understand that. I have guys that want to come in the weight room, like football guys, train 4 days a week in the weight room at the college. They want to come in extra on Tuesday, Thursdays in the morning. And it's hard to tell them, like, hey, I would love to have you here, and I'm probably going to allow them to come, but I get to control their training.
Yep.
I know what they're doing at the college, and I know what I'm going to make them do. And when they come in with me in the morning, it's going to be simple movements like bicep curls, tricep, you know, like movements that aren't not going to tax them as if I made them squat in the morning and squat at night.
Yeah, it's not to say that, like I was talking about, like being in the gym too much, like there's a way to go about it properly, and you've hit it right on the head. Is like, if you're complimenting what you're doing, that's what I wasn't seeing when I was at the high school. It's like, I'd have guys that coming in and like they're squatting, and I don't even realize it because I wasn't in that morning.
Yeah.
And I'm like sitting here, they're like, oh yeah, I tried to, like, I got this much on squat this morning, I'm gonna try to beat that. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Like, you just did you that just this morning. Yeah. You think like
less than 48
6 hours or whatever, like, you think that's gonna
ridiculous.
Be enough recovery time?
But then that's how people are naive, though.
Yeah.
You know, they don't understand. Like, you can't recover that way. You know, the other thing that I was going to say is, you know, I talk to the people, like my athletes, and I'm one of the things I say, tell them is, like, with these football players, you have to communicate to me and let me know if you feel like you're doing too much.
Yeah.
And a lot of guys don't want to tell you that, but I need to know that. I need to have that feedback so then I don't get you to the overtraining, burnt out position where you're getting injured. You know, and you'll know if you're doing too much when you start getting injured. And this is what I tell athletes. You start getting injured and you're sick all the time.
Injured, sick, or like your performance is lacking.
Is lacking. Yeah. Yeah, you're not able to do what you normally would.
Yep.
And so that should be a big indicator that you need to pull back. Nobody wants to pull back. We live in a society where it's always push, 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 push. Oh, suck it up. You can do it. Like, it's just one game or whatever. That's the wrong mentality. You know, and so then you get these kids that is the athletes and personal like us that get overtrained, get injured, and then we have setbacks, and then it's very hard for people to bounce back from that. So that's what I have with your first bullet point over the overtraining. You know, don't allow your ego to be part of it. Take that out of the equation. Be smart when you are training. Listen to your body and know what you're doing. And if you don't know, then have people around you that do know how to train properly that
ask questions.
Yeah, that'll keep you in the right positions so that you don't get injured and get overtrained.
So I wrote this down earlier. It's in my other notes though. What is your thoughts? This is kind of what I was thinking about when I was kind of thinking about what I wanted to talk about with burning out. Do you find it, like, what is your thoughts on training individuals systematically? So, like, as I was going through my notes, and I've kind of been, like, kind of getting this content, consuming it myself, and I'm sitting here, I'm like, there's a lot of individualized things people have, height, weight, things like that. Not every gym, not every facility does it this way, but a lot of it you can be looked at as, like, it's systematic training. Like, everyone comes in, they get the same structured routine, they get this, they get that. And they're kind of just given a blueprint that's very just either generalized or like one size fits all. And I know you're kind of, obviously we come from a background of that. Like, that's kind of just what it is. And it's just easier to develop programs like that. If you like program for the more of like the general pop masses.
Yeah.
But it's obviously good to tweak things as needed on an individualized basis. But I was kind of like thinking about it. I'm like sitting here, it's like you see, like, when you go buy a program online, you pay $20, you get the PDF or whatever it is, you get the Excel, and then you just go through it. And I just find it funny, is like, how is that program going to specifically help that individual. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. And obviously that comes from just like trial and error. I think we've all been through it where it's like you, especially when we both started out, like in high school and stuff, like you find a fitness program online. It's because some big rip dude that you kind of like Ronnie Coleman's like released a program.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm going to try that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. But I just find it kind of ironic that we train individuals. Some of us do. I'm really trying to get away from it. Like training individuals in a systemic way. Whereas like, all right, you get a plethora of exercises. You got to do them a specific way at a specific weight or whatever. And I'm just like thinking about it more. It's like, what's wrong with maybe looking at it from an individual standpoint? Like trying to, it's a hard thing to do. I think that's the first kind of answer, is it's hard to train 100 athletes 100 different ways. Mm-hmm. But my answer on it would be is like, if there's a way to obviously have a bit of a base structure that you can bounce from or build from, but then hopefully you're as a coach, you're specifically kind of maybe tweaking or targeting different athletes different ways to get them the best results. Because not every athlete's going to respond
the same way.
Yeah. So maybe what's your thoughts on that? Because I know you're really good at like having an athlete do something a little differently, or maybe having them do something completely different. Like, hey, this exercise probably not good for you, whether obviously from an injury standpoint or maybe even just from a genetic standpoint. So what's your thoughts on that?
I agree with you on that. I think it'd be awesome to do that. Individualize the training that you're giving for that client or that athlete. It's just finding a way to do it that's mm-hmm. appropriate, that you can also train if you have groups of the other kids. And if you have more, like, I think
here's a good example. Like when you look at it, like a football program, like a weight training football program, like why are the linemen training the same as the skill positions? In some ways they aren't. Like if you look at some places there, you got the DBs, you got like the skill people, they're doing certain things with certain movements while you got like linemen doing something else.
Yeah.
But, and then of course there's always general things that work good for everyone.
Everybody.
Like everyone needs to have these fundamental things.
Yeah.
But I just kind of see it from a broad perspective. Like when I look online, it's like, okay, like someone could download a football program online and it's like, what does that mean? Like mm-hmm. football in what regards? Mm-hmm. And then you see like, oh, they're doing this, that, and the other. It's like,
yeah,
maybe they shouldn't be. Maybe like, again, skills should do skills or et cetera.
I know. I agree. I think they should. I just think the problem is most places, facilities, gyms don't have the
resources,
the manpower.
Yep, I can see that.
To do the individualized training. Like, I would be honest to say that I don't individualize the training like at the college because I don't have the manpower to do it. So is that the best? No, because then athletes have these injuries that I can't work with them one-on-one with. I don't have the time.
Yeah, you definitely got to work with what you got.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just kind of looking at it at a different perspective.
But I think as a whole, if you want to alleviate the overtraining and burnout and whatnot, I think it would be ideal to train the weaknesses.
Yeah.
I mean, that's ideal, like, because then you're going to have the best performing athlete because you're working on his or her, you know, weaknesses that normally if they were with the mass population that they'd be neglecting. So like there's things that I know that I do with like volleyball. They're very anterior, you know, they're overtraining mm-hmm. the anterior side with all their swinging, their hitting. So I know that the majority of the girls do not have the musculature in their upper back, lower back to handle what they're doing all the time. So I know as a whole that I need to train their backside, posterior side a lot more than the front side. Does that make sense? But if I could even break it down even more, like let's say you're a volleyball player that has a weak core, most do anyways, but I would do something extra for you. And if I was another volleyball player, like I have one that has bad glute activation, you cannot activate your glutes very well. Well, then I would be giving her something extra to do. And like this could be at the end of the training, you know, yes, that day. It's just knowing your athletes enough to be thinking and knowing what you should be doing or having enough time to do it. And that's the time part of it is very hard to have that time. You know, if you're given an hour warm up, you know, like if you add it all in, it leaves very little time to work on the weaknesses, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the top programs, they've figured it out.
Yes.
They figured out how to do that. They have the resources like we talked about. They have the people, the coaches there to do that. And then that's why their athletes aren't getting injured. And that's why they're performing so well.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I look at that.
Yeah. I can maybe even look at it more of like group fitness, right? In the regards of like maybe like an Orange Theory or something like that, where like everything is just, it's pretty cut and dry. I know there's a lot of places that do good things, like even CrossFit. CrossFit maybe blends that line of like they have a workout of the day, and depending on who's programming it and how they're programming it, it could be a very broad thing that only fits a finite group amount of people. And obviously, like I from a programming perspective, I always look at it like when I used to program for whoever, like you do have to somewhat like program for the masses, right? Or they used to always say is like you program for the best and then you modify for the rest. And I mean, that's obviously one way to go about it. But the more you can think of it on an individualized thing, the more you can help more people. Because like if you go to just a boot camp class and like everything, because I mean, I worked at those places before. And I know from experiences like you're programming very broad, very inclusive. Okay, you're trying to fit everyone, but everyone's not everyone.
Exactly.
And you're kind of just throwing them into the fire. And like a lot of times you look at it for people, especially if who you're looking at demographically, like they just want to get in, have a good workout and go. And it's funny, like I hate that approach because I know there's a lot more to it. Like obviously like, and something's better than nothing, of course.
Yeah.
But yeah, especially when I see it, especially from a burnout perspective, is like you're just going in and you're just doing a bunch of random shit, getting your heart rate up, and maybe you're doing things that, again, someone maybe can do, but maybe you can't do. And if there's no modification to it, if there's no like quote unquote scaling, proper scaling, that's where like the injuries happen. Exactly. I think that's a big thing if you want to look at it from like those gym perspectives, like CrossFit. CrossFit, it gets a lot of heat for it. And I think it's probably because the individualized people like from gym to gym are doing it kind of wrong. Cause they know like, oh, they just see like, oh, like this is what the best are doing. So we got to kind of do it like that. And they don't look at it on a scale of, again, some do, some don't, some are great at it, some aren't, of taking things and stripping them down and kind of like looking at it. So you kind of hit it good where you're talking about like, we're going to do the bulk base level stuff that for the majority of people, everyone can do squatting, lunge, like those movement patterns that everyone's kind of going to benefit from. And then you kind of take a step back or you utilize some time of like, okay, maybe like these kind of people have like a glute deficiency. They got a glute imbalance. So we're going to target these for them during this point in the workout. While some other people might have some shoulder impingements, some shoulder instabilities. Maybe we'll give them something to do. So it's really good perspectively to look at it like that. Like, all right, we're going to obviously from a logistical standpoint, you do have to program in a more systematic approach. But if you have the wherewithal and kind of like the in the back of your mind, like, well, we're going to have to like tweak it and modify it person to person.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the best way you can kind of go about it.
Yeah.
Because, it's really hard to program. Like, you can't train 20 people 20 different ways.
No.
You have to kind of train 20 people one way in a scope that fits most people.
Yeah. I agree. For sure. That's good.
What are your thoughts on So overreaching now, because kind of we talk about overtraining, like overreaching in the regards of like hitting, going too heavy too often, or like not really fixated on like how much weight is happening when. What's your approach on that?
I think you have to have a good foundation. You know, you have to be, you have to start where you build your foundation, where you're doing movements enough times where you build off of that. You know, I you have to, and you know, I can say that, okay, could I squat twice a day? Yes, because I mean, I could, I'm not going to, but I can control, I know what I'm eating, I know how many calories I'm putting in my body, I know what type of stressors I'm going to be, that are going to be around, you know, yeah, me. And so I can control a lot of those things. Athletes, other people, I have no clue what's going on. So I would not tell them to do a movement twice a day, one in the morning, one at night, knowing, not knowing like what they do during the day. You know, or did you eat anything? That's huge. A lot of athletes aren't eating. You know, did you have something come up in your day that's very stressful that is going to create a position where you're not going to be able to be thinking about your movements while you're doing them? There's a lot of it that goes into it. I think more is not better.
Yeah.
Ever. I think simple is the best. We don't need to over...
Simple sells, man.
It is. I mean, like, it just works.
It's easy as that.
You know, why do we need to do more than that? You know, most athletes I work with, all they need is the basics. They have never built a foundation. So I give them the basics. Let me teach you how to squat properly. Let me teach you how to do a movement, you know, like a clean pull. I don't even teach power cleans anymore, to be honest, 100% honest. Like, it's such a, I mean,
I don't want to say it's an aged thing, but it kind of is.
Like, it's just not, it's not needed. Yeah. I mean, I can get the same benefits out of doing a clean pull or high pull. The same power output.
Like med ball work. Like there's a lot more dynamic
that can alleviate
things. Yeah, like explosive based movements.
Exactly. That
one either have the same benefit and stimulus at a lesser
chance of them getting injured.
Yeah. Lesser injury.
So, I mean, that's just knowing, percentage. You know, what you have to be intelligent with what you're doing, and knowing that if I do exercises that are not going to be overreaching what that kid or that athlete or client can do, then I'm going to, you know, eliminate the stressors, or even that position of them getting hurt is more important. So for me, it's just reminding the people I work with that, you know, we got to slow down. You know, it takes years to get to these big results. And that's the mindset of most people, is they want it now. We've talked about that before. Social media is telling you, you see this great lifter, I need to be doing that. You're always looking at somebody else. Look at yourselves. Like, look at you. Who cares about anybody else's training besides yourself? Like, you don't need to overreach, because it's only that you against yourself. People are overreaching because they're watching everybody else, like we already talked about.
Yep. They want to, like, either
they want to be doing what they're doing. They need to do what they're doing.
Or they feel inferior because, like, oh, he's hitting this much,
or she's doing this much. Like, and it's ridiculous. No. Like, be grounded in what you're doing and believe in what you're doing.
Yep.
You know, the basic stuff, the basic movements, the basic lifts, the basic programming will work.
Yep.
Because you haven't even done that yet. You know, you haven't done that.
You haven't done that, and you haven't done it for a long enough time. Everyone's like, all right, everyone kind of knows the basis is good, you know, like the ground level lifts, the things like that. Everyone understands, like, okay, these are good for me, but they don't do them long enough. They think, like, oh, I just do them maybe for like a cycle, 2 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then it's like, all right, now I got to get fancy with it.
Yeah.
Now I got to put more weight on the bar. Now I got to put bands on. Now I got to do the flashy social media stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's like where everyone thinks that's like the end all be all, or like that's the end of the journey. And it's like, definitely not.
Yeah. And that's hard, because like I get people that want to train with me that they're not ready to do what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I can do the flashy stuff. I can do dumb things and not get hurt.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's just because I've trained long enough. Mm-hmm. I've put in the time. I've put in years of doing this. So I should be able to do these things that most people can't do, you know? And And that's just knowing where I stand. You know, I wouldn't be able to do the training I'm doing right now if I hadn't done this. When I first started in college, there's no way. I mean, like, my body wasn't ready for this. A lot of learning and living has taught me how to train the way I train now, and I'm able to do it. And so then it's different than somebody that's novice that isn't as trained. So it's knowing and being okay with knowing that you need to start at the very bottom. Work your way up to the totem pole to get to the top, to achieve those big goals that you want.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll be better from it.
So I'm gonna throw something at you. And I've been kind of looking into this, you know, and I listened to a podcast earlier. Can't remember what it was called, but they kind of touched on this. So I want to get your thoughts on it, Miguel. So we look in regards to sports and training for athletics, right? We see, like, in a weight room setting, okay, in a training setting, when we're looking at, like, strength, right? What factors come into it? Like, why do we train certain athletes to be able to lift certain amounts of weight? Like, what's the necessity out of that? And why do we push athletes to their limits of, like, let's keep it more simple. Like, in football, you know, like, if you're looking for athletes, like, trying to bench 300-plus pounds, right? And then, like, squatting 400-plus pounds, maybe deadlifting 500-plus pounds. Depends on who you're asking. But, like, what's the purpose for the, like, lifting that much when then you equate it to, like, their actual sport of play?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why are we having athletes lift 300, 400, 500-plus pounds in the weight room when in practice or in a practical standpoint, like game time situations, the most they're really lifting is, I don't know, maybe they're picking their QB off the ground because they fell down or things like that. So, like, what's the benefit of lifting so heavy of weights when, from an athletic standpoint, yeah, like when we're looking at, like, athletes doing what they're doing, like, they're not moving those kind of weights, like, in, yeah, practice. And I'm not talking about, like, I'm talking about athletes, like, sports, not strongman, not CrossFit, not things like that, like football, basketball, baseball. Like, what are maybe the, like, why are we doing that? That's kind of my question.
I think it's culture. I really think that a lot of it has to do with, like, we got to do this big weight because that's what is the standard is. That's what has been set. Is it advantageous? No, but I think there could be some benefits where you could say that, you know, you're building confidence in those athletes, knowing your limits. We had a kid that was squatting mostly squatted 650. He's a running back. And we just kind of stopped him after that because it's like, what's the point?
Yeah.
You know, like, were the chances of injury after this are greater than it would be, you know, if we kept going, the chance of injury was going to be a lot higher. He could have probably squat 700 or plus. He's a freak. But it wasn't worth it.
Yeah.
I am 100% on par with, like, what you're saying is, like, if you look at a running back, when is he ever moving 600 pounds?
Yeah. Of course we're going, like, if you want to really deep, like, bring it down, it's like you're trying to have them be able to apply greater forces, right?
Forces
to the ground, forces, like, when they're trying to move blocks,
power development,
things like that. The thing comes into it is, like when does the weight become too much? Because, you know, like, yeah, how do you, like, you, like, what's the greater difference between squatting, like, doing a 300-pound squat for X amount of reps at, like, a high force,
yeah,
comparatively to 600? Obviously, there's, yeah, greater force production at the 600 pounds.
Yeah.
But when we're trying to just do force production in general, like, is there a greater benefit or less benefit for lifting more?
I think you're going to increase the chance of injury lifting more weight.
Absolutely. Yep.
It's hard because I would say, like, I'm subject of it. It's hard to get, you know, like, you have these kids for a certain amount of time that are absolutely weak.
Yep.
So they come in weak And so you're building them up, you know, so you're moving more weight that builds their confidence. And what I've been seeing is it improves their performance.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Confidence.
Not,
yeah. You're definitely
not saying that. That's such a tough subject, man. Like, it's so hard because I get
same thing.
Like, it goes back and forth. Like, because there's a point where it's stupid. Like, you don't need to. I can keep you at a lower weight and work on speed, which I've been, you know, I've been kind of utilizing a little bit more with like smaller groups. It's like having a dynamic day where we're just, the weights are like 40, 45%, 50%. And we're just working on moving it quickly, right? Which it could be more advantageous than just doing the heavier stuff. You know, like, it's knowing your athletes though too. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could throw that in there, but I just think it's the kids also want to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's like, it comes back to culture,
yeah,
though.
Yeah,
you know?
You hit it on the head with the culture thing. It's like, it's what we have done, it's what things like that. But when you look at it from a culture standpoint, it's like, well, smoking cigarettes used to be a culturally hot topic as well. So it's like, when do you start to realize it's like, okay, what we've been doing, what we thought was good, is maybe not good. Like, mm-hmm. When does that come into play? And I think that's coming around in the performance world, is you're starting to realize, like, a lot of training places and things like that are understanding that, like, hey, like, we understand, like, greater force production is positive, but in a stimulus standpoint, mm-hmm. there comes a point where too much stimulus is unnecessary or mm-hmm. more harmful than beneficial for sure.
Yeah, and you know, they have ways to you know, when you're training, a lot of places train speed.
Yep.
You know, if your speed goes down, then you lower the weight.
Yep.
You know, and that's really smart, because then at that point you're gonna decrease the chance of this athlete getting injured, because maybe one day they can lift 185 at 0.03 meters per second or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next time they come in, they're supposed to do 185 again or whatever, and it's a lot slower. Well, they're probably central nervous system is being taxed, or they're not recovering, so they're not being able to move the weight. Well, let's pull them back. Let's drop them 20 pounds, and now their speed's back up to where it needs to be. Well, if we're always constantly pushing, you would just tell them, oh, well, you went 185 last week. Let's go 205 for your sets. Well, they're not hitting speed anymore, so pull back. In a lot of ways, like, I don't have that measurement. I just have my eyes to do the measurement.
Obviously.
So, like, if I see the bar moving
slowly,
I'm like, okay, we're pulling way back today.
Or the exertion rate's, like, far greater. Like, you're seeing them kind of, like, strain a little too much than what we're wanting for this session.
Yeah. And that's just that being able, you know, like, talking to those athletes and knowing that I got to change up this program today because you're not what you normally are. Yep. So let's pull back. And being able to do that, I don't know, that part, you got me thinking about that, you know, on training. And
yeah, like, I even think about too. So, like, I didn't want to throw it at you and like, ha ha moment. Cause I actually think a lot of it as well. Like, what is the point? What is the process beyond it? You know, because we're obviously trying to maximize our performance, minimize our risk for injury. Yeah. Like, where does that line cross? Where is the metric kind of stop of heavier weights and things like that because of the practicality of it. You got athletes that are on a field, like on a basketball court, like, they're not moving that much load. Mm-hmm. So why are we putting that much load and stress on them when we could maybe get the same or maybe even more benefit from lesser loads, more explosive? Obviously, if you're talking about a good coach, and I think we're both on the same page of that, is like, you're looking at posture, position, and speed. And technique and force production in that mm-hmm. regards is like, I don't like what's on the bar ultimately doesn't matter, right? Because we're trying to create those stimuluses of good posture, good position, good bar speed, good acceleration, good things like that, because that's obviously a greater transfer to the sport. Mm-hmm. I've been thinking about it a lot as like max out days and things like what are we getting out of that? Yeah. Now that we can maybe looking at it like, okay, this could be a negative thing long term.
You know, and I know, like, my kids look forward to it.
Yeah.
It's like a big day again, for them, you know? So it's like, I don't want to, it's so hard. You don't want to take that away from them.
You don't.
Because then it gives them something to push for, too.
But you have good points on that, too, because, you're creating confidence, you're creating culture, you're creating this the sense and, you know, like, within
at,
the athletes.
At the end of the day, too, maybe this is just justifying what I'm doing. So I don't know. But, you know, I'm not seeing my athletes get hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and ultimately, that's like, what then it comes I'm like, down
well, maybe it's
it.
Not that bad. But I also, I'm also just watching them. You know, I'm watching them, seeing how they're doing their movement, how they look, how they're acting. That all plays a big part of like the training. And like, honestly, man, like I made a program for like middle school and I've already gotten away from it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm just like, it's just so hard because like it always is changing. That's the thing. I don't know how many kids I'm ever going to have. I don't, you know, there's a lot of things that play a factor. So like the program is kind of out the door because it's like, well, if I'm hitting these movements, great. But then I have, you know, like if the whole majority of the kids aren't ready to go at the intensity I thought they were going to be at, yeah. Now my program is kind of like crap, yeah. You know, like,
which I found in that regard of like, obviously having a roadmap's really good,
yeah.
Of your program.
Yeah.
But not being like totally religious with it.
Mm-hmm.
And like you, even in our own training, you know, yeah. Like I'll create a program or I'll follow a program. And when things start not going the way they should be, it's discouraging.
Yeah.
So you got to have that idea of like, okay, like having your structure there, but allowing yourself to tweak it to, yeah, how you're feeling, yeah. Or like you're talking about with your athletes, like how many do you have and things like that.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's necessarily like, obviously it can be discouraging if you allow it to be, but I don't think it is of having just a correct mindset of like, you know what, like we have the building blocks, but we can add and take away if we need to.
For sure.
And it's not a bad thing.
Yeah. There we go again. But I want to get into the conversation too. I don't know what other thoughts you had about like what we're talking about, but we need to.
Let's do maybe next week we do like a recovery, because we've talked about like training and mm-hmm. overtraining, things like that. We should maybe go into more of like a recovery, because that was going to be my last kind of point.
Okay.
So I think we can maybe hit on that recovery or like things like that. Cause,
and then I think we want to talk about the how do you. When is too much push for kids when they're training? From the other, not from us as coaches, but from their parents.
Yeah. Okay.
From other like outside that. Factors, we got to discuss that, because that's something that I see a lot of. And I think it'd be a good conversation to discuss, okay, when do you push, you know, and how much are you pushing for your child to be doing all this training, sports, and weight room? And when do you need to pull back? Is more better? Because more seems to be better right now in this day and age. Is that really beneficial for your child? You know, why are you doing this? What are the, you know, that type of thing. So
right.
Yeah, recovery. And then we will discuss, you know, the athletes and parents. Are you doing the right thing for your athletes?
Sounds good. All right. So there you go. That concludes today's episode of Wisdom of the Weight Room. We hope you enjoyed it. Remember what I said at the beginning of the podcast. Go like, subscribe, and follow on all of our social platforms, Instagram, Spotify, Apple Podcast, and YouTube. Do all the cool things there so that way you're notified when these podcasts are dropped. That's going to be it for us. We will see you next time.